Hello and welcome back to the third episode of Cross Court Conversations, the podcast that breaks the mold of every other tennis podcast out there by just being two guys chatting about their favorite sport, tennis. Don't forget to follow us on our socials, on Insta and X at Cross Court Combos. And now I'm going to throw it over to my beautiful co-host, Juan. Juan, how you doing?
Hey, Jason, how's it going? It's good to be back. Another episode of Cross Court Conversations, chatting once again about the Australian Open, which for us concluded today. Not sure when you're going to be listening to this, hopefully very soon. But for us, it finished today.
And, well, for me, it was yesterday.
Time zone, social construct or whatever. Like, man, just the same time, man. But yeah, it was exciting. And of course, now a little bit of the post-slam blues are settling in, thinking like, oh, what am I going to watch now that the Australian Open is gone? But it's a good time to talk about it, don't you think? I mean, it just finished.
Yeah, it's nice and fresh in my brain at the moment, or at least I think so. We'll see once we actually get talking about it. But yeah, what do we think about the tournament in general? I was pretty happy with everything. I thought it was a pretty good tournament. What about you?
I have mixed feelings about the tour. We can start with the WTA tour. That final was yesterday, I guess, for me, and 2 days ago for you. I thought the WTA tournament was fantastic. I loved it. I thought it was full of thrills, drama, and none bigger than, of course, Madison Keys winning her maiden Grand Slam title. She defeated two-time defending champion, world number one, Aryna Sabalenka. So for the plot, this match, you know what I mean? Like, it had a lot of plot lines and drama and swings of momentum. I love the final as much as I love the whole tournament.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We'll get into the ATP. I like both of them. But yeah, the women's side had everything, upsets, storylines, and then obviously a completely unexpected winner that I don't think anyone saw coming. And the storylines.
We didn't even talk about her once.
No.
About her once in our preview.
I mean, she was like the 19th seed going in, so I'm not really surprised that she didn't come up in our conversations about who would be a favorite or even a dark horse. And she hasn't really got to this stage in a Grand Slam since 2017. The storylines around this win for Madison Keys are pretty incredible. And the way that she did it as well, to beat the number one, to beat the number two, and beat Elena Rybakina as well.
Yeah, to give you a stat on that, like, the average ranking of her opponents were 12.3, which is the highest ever for a slam in the 2020s. Second in that list is Markéta Vondrousova's Wimbledon title run, and the average opponent ranking was 19, so 7 spots higher for Madison Keys.
Yeah. Yeah, she was the first woman since Svetlana Kuznetsova in the 2009 French Open to beat both the number one and the number two seed on the way to a Grand Slam title. So really impressive stuff and completely unexpected. And I agree with, I thought the final was actually quite good. It was quite fast-paced because you have two big hitters going at it. You're not going to get super long rallies. And yeah, there were swings in momentum, which meant that the second set went by quite quickly. But I thought the third set was just, I was on the edge of my seat for a lot of it. And I thought that Sabalenka was going to come through. And then just, it only took one break and she got it right at the opportune time. And yeah, I thought it was a great game. I really do.
Yeah, it was amazing. There's two shots specifically that, like, I think really had me on the edge of my seat. There was one where it was 30 all, 5-5 in the last set, Madison Keys serving. She serves a really good serve, and Sabalenka absolutely smashes it back to her. And Madison Keys, almost on her knees, just puts a crazy forehand on the other side for a winner. And the match point. The match point, forehand winner. Like, it just showed that Madison Keys went in there to win that match. Like, she was not going to stand back. She was either going to lose out on her sword or win it her way. And I think that that was so impressive for her to just show no fear. She had a really bad first slam final. She lost, yeah. I want to say...
6-3, 6-love.
6-love. Yeah, exactly. Like, that could be so scarring for a player to lose a slam final 6-love in a set. So it was so cool to just see her, like, go all out for it. And you know what? That makes her the oldest first-time WTA champion, Grand Slam champion, at 29 years old.
Yeah, what an achievement, honestly. Never saw it coming. really gave us. And I think that the scenes after the final as well were quite touching, seeing how emotional she was, seeing how emotional her team was. That's all you want out of tennis and sport in general, is that level of emotion when someone achieves something that they've been searching for pretty much their entire career. So yeah, it was really great. Let's do a quick rating of the tournament out of 10. What do you reckon?
I mean, out of 10 for the
For the
WTA
WTA.
tour, I would say I'd give it like an 8.5. I thought it was really good. My match of the tournament was Iga against Madison Keys, along both tours. I thought it was the best match of the Australian Open. It was amazing. And the stakes being a semi-final, I thought it was great. And we also had like some cool stories, like, Evalise, she became the first lucky loser to reach round of 16. Apparently, like, she had no idea she was even meant to play. Like, she found out like 2 hours before she was meant to play, and then she just stepped in and won three matches. Like, pretty impressive stuff. So yeah, I really, really, really liked it. What would you give it?
I would go for 8 out of 10. Yeah, it was really
8 out
good.
of
I
10.
agree with you as to the match of the tournament, Madison Keys Iga. I did fall asleep during the third set. It does get quite late for the night sessions here, and that one kept on going. And I was a little disappointed
That's
that I did
crazy,
fall
like,
asleep.
how far ahead New Zealand is, man. When you tell me you're falling asleep during the night session, because it's like 2 a.m. and in Australia it's still like 11 or something. Like,
Well,
it's ridiculous.
yeah. But the Australian night sessions, even for local time, go quite late. If you
Yeah,
have
right?
a five setter that starts in the night session, those games will go until 1, 2 a.m. in the morning, which is pretty
Man, I got
ridiculous when you
work
think
the
about it.
next
Can you
day.
imagine what that does to a tennis player's body if they have to play tennis? Can you imagine playing tennis at 1 or 2 in the morning? Can you imagine doing anything at 1 or 2 in the morning? It's
Yeah,
just it's kind of
no.
crazy.
Other than sleep, no. Okay, I could watch tennis, but I'm not playing. But like, I could do that, but I no, it's insane.
Exactly.
But one thing definitely that we didn't do well, just go quickly through our predictions that we made pre-tournament. We did not do very well on these predictions on the WTA tour
On the,
specifically.
no. Do you want to run me down what exactly I had there? Oh, and what you
Okay,
had there as
so
well.
for Gambler's Dream, right? So our player to potentially fill somebody's pockets with money. I had Yulia Putintseva, you had Ons Jabeur. Neither of them hit because, sure, they made the third round, but the first time they had to play somebody highly ranked, they lost. So they did not become anybody's gambler's dream. The dark horse, I had Jessica Pegula, awful shout. She got destroyed by Olga Danilovic in the second round. And then Karolina Mukova was your pick, another terrible shout because she lost to Osaka early. The one good shout we had is that we both had Sabalenka as our most likely winner, and she was a set away from it.
Yeah, I guess that's okay. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer to put Sabalenka in there. I think we also had
Yeah.
Goff at number two. When did she lose in the quarterfinal?
In the quarters to Badosa, yeah. Which was,
Yeah.
I thought, it was a regression performance from Coco Gauff, like against Badosa. She was hitting a lot of forehand errors. She didn't have as many, I think she only had six double faults,
But
which I
same
mean is
problems, just
still,
different.
yeah.
Same problems, different day for Coco Gauff.
Exactly. I was really looking forward to that semi-final against Sabalenka, and I was really looking forward to the final between Iga and Sabalenka.
Yeah, were you a little bit peeved in the end that we didn't get that final that I think we were both looking for?
I think a little bit, yeah. We haven't had it. Like, I saw people complaining, like, oh, we've seen that final. Like, we saw it in Madrid last year, and we saw it in Rome literally like 2 weeks later. But it never had a slam. Like, the fact that if Iga and Sabalenka played, whoever won would have been number one. Like, that would have been an even, like, the stakes are the highest in tennis at that point.
Yeah, it's the same that we haven't got Carlos versus Sinner in a Grand Slam final yet. And when that does happen, it
Exactly.
will be massive. It will be huge.
No, I completely agree. But I think Iga, regardless, should leave the tournament with her head held high. I thought she played
Absolutely.
outstanding, outstanding up until I picked her against Madison Keys. You didn't, which was crazy.
What a
I thought you
prediction.
were going to pick her. Yeah, honestly, girl, insane. Because I thought Iga, I thought Iga would redirect the power of keys and make her move around, because she was one. I mean, sure, Emma Raducanu hasn't really shown any sort of US Open Grand Slam title winning form that she had, but to beat her like 6-1, 6-love was ridiculous. Like, she wiped the floor with her.
I think what really impressed me about Iga was the strides that she's made in developing her game. It's quite obvious that she's worked on the serve massively, and she's doing things like at the net. She comes in forward a little bit more often as well. It's quite clear that she took the year last year and has made some changes. And I think she should be very happy with a semi-final performance, because on the hard court slams last year, she didn't get anywhere close to a semi-final. So a semi-final, there's no shade at that at all. I think she should go with her head held high after that. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think she lost a match against a player who just happened to play better than her that day. Madison Keys played out of her mind. She saved match points. Like,
I mean, she went to Madison beat Sabalenka in the next game. So, you know,
exactly. It's
for these 2 weeks for these 2 weeks she has been the best player in the world, and that's kind of,
I mean, she hasn't lost this year yet, because she also won the title in Brisbane. So she is undefeated. Back-to-back titles. Like, Madison Keys, I'm pretty sure, is number one in the live race. Like, I would be surprised if she isn't.
Yeah, she has to be. Yeah.
Right? After winning a Slam and a 250 the week before. So
also, career-high number 7 ranking for her now, which is pretty impressive. Yeah.
So, and the one who she knocked out is a player we had at number 3 for favorites, Jiang Qingwen.
What?
She also had a bit of a mare.
Biggest letdown, something that both of us would neither expect, because we expected after last year, she had a crazy year last year, and, you know, WTA finals, final, Olympic gold, and then to lose second round, was it? In straight sets.
To Laura Siegmund,
97th ranked in the world. I was very surprised.
Yeah. Apparently she's carrying still an injury from the off season, but still, like, usually you do see players who, like, I'm not saying like, oh, she should have played through it, should have still won, because I have no idea with the extent of her injuries, but sometimes these top players can find that, regardless of being slightly hampered, they just have like a way of winning, which I guess maybe it's something she'll develop, I don't know. But
Novak has a pretty good knack of doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, he was injured in the game. I mean, I gave him some shit. We'll get onto that in the ATP roundup, but yeah, playing with a muscle tear to beat Alcaraz.
I mean, we can get on here right now. I think I've said most of
what I want to say about the WTA. So
me,
yeah,
too. It was
on
a great tournament. Let's go, Madison Keys. Calendar slam. Yeah. Here we go.
Tequila.
So let's get started. How about the ATP tournament? So this one was won by none other than the world number one, Jannik Sinner, defending his title in Australia. It's his second straight Grand Slam since he won. The second straight Grand Slam. He won the US Open, which was the last Slam of last year. Now he won the first one. Third Grand Slam title, all hard courts, only lost 2 sets. Was undeniable, and I think today he showed that there are just, at least on hard courts, it's Jannik Sinner, and then a massive pitfall, and then a massive, and then an even bigger one, and then potentially an even bigger one, and then it's whoever, Zverev, Djokovic, whoever you want to put there.
Yeah, it's, I think last night we're saying different things. You're saying today, I'm saying last night, but we are talking about the same game. last night he showed just how levels above he is of some other players. I mean, he wipes Zverev off the court. He never looked like he got out of first gear. You know, he was just, from the word go, was just so on it, was missing so rarely, hit all the big shots. Anytime the rally was extended, he usually came out on top. His serve was on it. He was just locked in, and this is the Sinner that we saw pretty much from the quarterfinals onwards. After that game against Holger Rune, he was unstoppable. Like, he didn't drop a set from the quarters, did he? He wiped Dimonor off the court, you know, in the semis. Did the same to Shelton after a kind of tough first set, in which I think Shelton just kind of lost his focus at the wrong time after being broken back. And he's definitely got some growing to do in that sense. And then against Zverev, I think we were both expecting Sinner to win, but to win in that fashion was quite ridiculous. And just to never look like he was ever in doubt was, yeah, it's really impressive. And it's got to hurt for Zverev as well to know that you're technically that far off these guys. And I think I also said to you during the match, how good of a season Sinner had last year, where he dominated the tour, crazy record throughout the tour, and then to come in and be better than, to my eyes, be better than he was last year, is ridiculous. Like, how have you gone in the off season after one of the best years in tennis history, you could say, and somehow you're coming back and you're looking, you've developed your game even more. So it's just, he's going to be so hard to stop this year. I'm really curious to see what he can do in the French Open at Wimbledon. Has he developed his game to be better on those surfaces? I think French Open, I'd give him a really good chance. You know, I think his clay court game, he wasn't that far off the level of Alcaraz and players like that. I think it's more the grass where we'll see what he's truly made of, whether...
Yeah, you know, I mean,
I don't want to jinx anything. Calendar year Grand Slam is on at the moment.
And so. Not even that. Like, technically, the Sinner Slam is on because if he wins the French Open and Wimbledon, he will have all four slams. Like, just not in a calendar year, but he will be the defending champion at all four slams.
But he could do
the Sinner Slam.
Which also, if he won the French Open and Wimbledon, he would beat Rafa's record to the fastest career Grand
Slam to be the youngest,
well.
Yeah, and he would he would fuck Alcaraz from doing it. Probably,
I mean, Alcaraz would still have, I think, one shot to get. He would need to win the Australian Open next year,
because I think if he can win by 2027, is his last chance, right? Alcaraz has two more Australian Opens.
I think he has two more because Rafa was 24 when he did it. I don't know. Maybe it would have been different had Djokovic not beaten Alcaraz. Had we seen Alcaraz Sinner in the final.
Honestly, yeah, simultaneously, the biggest, like, I mean, it was one of the biggest moments of the whole tournament, right? Like, Djokovic-Alcaraz, like, the match I thought was not as high quality as some of their other encounters, but it was still amazing watch. I had so much fun watching it. Both players had huge moments, and to see Djokovic win it, but I was a little bit disappointed that Alcaraz didn't go to the final against Sinner, but also that just... unfortunately, because of the injury, he had to retire against Zverev. And then it just kind of, like, I felt like it kind of sucked some energy out of the semis. The fact that could have been Alcaraz against Zverev, and at least it could have been a match or whatever. But instead, we got Djokovic beating Alcaraz. Like, I don't know. I'm not blaming Djokovic for beating Alcaraz. Like, that's Alcaraz's fault. But, like, it just kind of sucked a bit of energy out, the way that the semifinal transpired in the end between Novak and Zverev.
Let me talk about the Djokovic-Alcaraz game first. I thought the match was incredible. It was only missing a fifth set because the level that I think both players showed, it was pretty similar to what we saw at the Olympics. Maybe not quite there, but then you also got to remember that here you're playing for five sets, so maybe both players are thinking, okay, I can't keep that insane level for five sets. But in saying that, I thought they both played incredible. Novak, so
it was vintage
Novak. He obviously has an injury, not going to argue that, but it was very peculiar in the match that the injury started to surface. You could see that he was wincing after points, but after that started to come in, somehow this guy, in every stat line, in ground stroke speed, serve speed, revolutions on the ball, this guy was statistically playing better after he got an injury than before.
Bro, he's a zombie, bro. He's
so
a zombie.
I don't know how he does it. In the past, has had a bit of showmanship to some of the things
sure.
that he does on the court. A little bit of gamesmanship as well. So... it is in these moments that I just question that it's so easy for me to question whether he's actually injured, but he obviously was, which makes that win even more insane.
No, I think it was the best I've seen Novak play since the ATP finals in Turin against Sinner in that final. And then, like, because since then, it's kind of been a bit of a decline, right? Since the end of the 2023 season. And that match against Alcaraz, especially sets, all the sets that he won, especially the last two. Oh my God. He just wouldn't miss. And he was just like that big wall that you're like, oh, he's got a winner. Nope. It's going back. And then he does these like super crazy, like, he's doing the splits, kind of just gets his racket on it and the ball goes so high up and you're like, oh, definitely going to bounce out. Oh, it bounces in. And you're like, how does he keep doing this? Like,
he's just a machine. And yeah, on the him retiring and that, obviously we didn't get the match, which sucked. And I think I witnessed something in tennis that I had never really witnessed before, which, because it was just so unexpected. He looked like he was moving fine. It looked fine. You know, you could tell that maybe there was something there that was bothering him, maybe on his serve a little bit. But then to like lose the set in the way that he did in a tiebreak, literally by 2 points, and then, you know, the camera, you could tell the cameraman wasn't expecting it either, because the camera's on Zverev, and the first that you realize that the game's over is the commentator's going, it's over, it's over. And I'm like, what's he talking about? And they're shaking hands at the net. I'm like, what just happened? I was so confused, like everyone in the stadium was as well. There were some boos in the stadium, which isn't great, but I can kind of understand that because it was so bizarre. It was just,
yeah,
you know,
I think the shock,
so out of nowhere.
I agree, the booing is like completely unnecessary, but I think people just also like to boo because they expect the match. I don't think necessarily they were booing Novak for retiring. I think they were more booing the situation of, well, now I'm defending people that boo tennis players when they're injured, so like actually fuck them. But
I mean, but, do you have any idea how much those tickets cost? So I think you're out like $400 minimum on
Australian Open exactly tickets, right? Yeah. And since for the men's semis they do a day and a night session, it's not like, okay, well, I have the ticket and Novak retired but I still get Sinner Shelton. It's like, no, you paid just for this. Like, you gotta go.
You're done. Go home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was a bit of a letdown. And I think in general, if we're talking about letdowns, I think why I didn't like it as much as the WTA tournament was because once we reached the quarterfinal, we had some really spicy matchups. We had Alcaraz against Djokovic, which lived up to it. I thought it was great. Deminor Sinner, I was really looking forward to it, and then it was over by hour 10. You knew it was over. Like, by an hour, you knew it was over. Zverev, Tommy Paul, like, what was that, man? Like, Tommy Paul absolutely playing out of his mind until it mattered, and then he would just absolutely shit himself.
He was virtually 5 points away from winning that match in straight sets. He served for the set twice. You served for the set in the first set and the second set, and just bottled it, and then won the third set. So he could have taken
super
it
easily.
Three.
He also won like 6-2 or something. Like, what the hell was that, Tommy?
I also had Deminor Sinner game as one of the biggest letdowns in the tournament because I had been watching Deminor. He had been playing so well. He had clearly done some massive work in the offseason. His serve was so much more powerful because that's what we had talked about with Deminor, is that he was missing weapons, and it just looked like in his previous games that he had got some weapons. And I wasn't expecting him to beat Sinner, but to lose in the fashion that he did was so shocking because, the way that he was playing, you just expected more from him, and I wanted more from him as well. I love Deminor. I love watching the guy play, and to get that was pretty disappointing. But while we're on the topic of letdowns, I think the ATP side had a fair few of them. I've also got Taylor Fritz, obviously my number three pick for my favorites for this tournament, lost in the fourth round to a goddamn retiree. You know, a guy who went to the next match and could barely walk, so it was just whacking the shit out of the ball every opportunity.
You know what?
He got.
I was thinking as well that Taylor Fritz like let me down a little bit, but when I watched that game and then just rewatching the highlights, like Gael Monfils played out of his mind yeah. that day. Like,
I mean, that's...
I think he would have beaten almost anybody with the level of tennis he played against Fritz. Like he was doing whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
He was just at his best.
He's probably one of the biggest storylines of this tournament, I think, on the yeah. ATP side especially, is just the career renaissance that he's having right now. You know, wins in Auckland and then goes to the quarterfinals in a slam and beats the number four in the world to get there, which was just
first
so...
time he's ever done that in a slam, you know? Beat the
top five number, win.
A top four player. Top five win was his first. Now, I'm trying to remember the statistic, but I think it was his first since the 2008 French Open. That long ago. And his first top four win ever. And the win in the French Open was against David Ferrer. That I do remember who it was against. But that just shows you like how long ago that was. That like David Ferrer was a top five player when he beat him. Like,
yeah, and I think going along with that storyline as well, you had his wife, Svitolina. They both made the quarterfinals and they both beat the fourth seeds to get there. I thought... It was pretty unique.
And they played one after the other on the same court. Like that was
it was very
it was meant to be.
It was very, very cute. Also in the letdowns, Giovanni and Pesci Pericard. We've got Monfils to thank for that as well.
Monfils, he killed all your picks, bro.
He killed my dreams. But the Pericard letdown was quite big, I think, because when I was watching that game, it was so obvious how far this guy is still off being a contender.
Right. I agree.
Some quite glaring holes in his game, his movement, the amount of unforced errors, and also just his backhand was... I don't know if that's a regular occurrence for him, but his backhand was so off in that game against Monfils.
I think in general, when I've seen him play, his backhand is not really a shot that fires for him. I think he's got to do something else other than be a bit of a serve bot, because like that's kind of what he showed he is.
Yeah.
This match against
exactly,
Monfils.
Yeah, exactly. And then also, I've said the three horsemen of the letdown: Casper Ruud, Stefanos Tsitsipas, and Andrei Rublev, doing what they do best, exiting early in a slam. I wasn't
losing
even
to kids, baby.
Losing to kids.
Oh, you forgot Casper Ruud, who also lost to a kid early on in the draw.
No, I said that. Yeah, Casper Ruud, Stefanos Tsitsipas.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry,
Rublev.
Medvedev. I wanted to say Medvedev.
I don't count Medvedev as a horseman of the letdown at the moment, but he's climbing there, bro.
He's climbing to that list, I'm telling you. He's going to start competing there.
He's in contention, but yeah, I mean, I predicted one of my big upset shouts with Tsitsipas losing in the first round, and he did, so thanks for that.
So he could stay home and cook for Paula while she was on a run to quarterfinals.
While she was, yeah, semifinals.
Semifinals.
Are we even surprised with these three losing early?
Let's talk about that, because that was something I wanted to bring up. I think that the first week of the ATP tournament was amazing, and then the second week of the WTA tournament was amazing. And the first week for me was amazing because of all these kids, like, just doing madness. Like, Lerner Tien beating... let's talk about that one quickly. Like, Lerner Tien beating Daniil Medvedev, that was my match of the tournament. That was insane. Like, that was an insane match. And then to watch Joao Fonseca the day before blast Rublev off the court. So impressive. To watch Jakob Mensik, like, beating Casper Ruud and looking like he belonged there. He just beat him so handedly. And yeah, it was so disappointing, but like it was, like you said, was it really that big of a shock? I mean, you predicted Tsitsipas to lose to Alex Mikkelsen, another 20-year-old kid. All of these four players played in the Next Gen Finals last season, so they're like some of the best under 21 players in the world. And yeah, I mean, clearly these guys not only have been caught up and exceeded by the likes of Alcaraz, Sinner, you could say Holger Rune sometimes on his day, but now it looks like even guys who are born like in 2005 are causing them issues. Like, what is going on with these guys?
Yeah, I think all three of those players, and Medvedev as well, really need to take a step back, look at their game, and realize that they need to do something if they want to compete with this, with these guys that are coming through. Because it's not just one or two guys that are coming through. There are so many kids coming up that are going to threaten, you know?
Yeah, we saw this tournament. Like four teenager. Ben Shelton, making another slam semifinal. Like, he's made two slam semifinals. Rublev is still to make one. That is insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. And I think on that note as well, Dimonor needs to hope that he doesn't fall into that quarterfinal trap. Because he's starting to pump up some numbers in the Grand Slam quarterfinal.
Last year he reached all of them, and it was like, oh, cool, now I'm just missing Australia. And he hits Australia, and it's like, oh, nice, let's go, Demon. Oh, shit. We lost to Sinner again.
I mean, yeah, tough draw to get Sinner in the quarterfinal. Had he had someone else, he might have made his way to the
semifinal. Honestly, maybe. I feel like against Zverev, like the way Zverev played that quarterfinal and the final today, which to me actually are very similar matches, except that, you know, he's playing Tommy Paul in one of them and he's playing Jannik Sinner in the other. So in the other, he escapes with a four-set win somehow. And in this one, he gets absolutely demolished from literally the first... I felt like after the first game was done, I was like, oh yeah, Sinner's going to win this match like pretty easily. Like, it just felt like it was always on his racket. I think that if he would have ran into Dimonor, like Dimonor maybe could have done something against Zverev. But yeah, I agree with you. He does maybe have... I quite like him at Wimbledon for some reason. I don't know why. I feel like his game suits grass. Maybe because he's won Hertogen Bosch in the Netherlands a few times. But yeah, hopefully he can do it because I do really like Alex Dimonor.
Yeah. I also just want to touch on Olga Runa for a bit, because I was actually quite impressed with him over this tournament. Even though he exited it in the fourth round, I think the Olga Runa that we saw last year could have easily lost his first match to Zheng after dropping the first set. And then I think he played really well to get through that. He beat Berrettini in four.
And he played well. I thought he played so well against Berrettini. Yeah.
And I think he just clearly has his head screwed on just a little bit more. So I really hope that he keeps that going through the rest of the year. But then in saying that, the one thing that kind of let him down was his head not being screwed on properly against Sinner. He had Sinner on the ropes. Sinner was struggling more than he had at any other point in the tournament. And everything that Olga Runa was doing in the third set was coming off. He was playing his game. He was doing great. And then just kind of started playing weird shots, started hitting drop shots for some reason that just didn't come off. I don't know if he was injured, but yeah, it was so weird because he was doing everything right, and then all of a sudden he was doing everything wrong. So
that one
was strange for me, but I still was quite impressed with what I saw from him.
No, I agree. I liked a lot of what I saw from him too. Actually, against Berrettini, we both picked Holger Rune to win, but I thought like, oh, I think we might lose Holger Rune today. Like, that is a match. I think last year, I don't know if he wins that match. Like you said, I don't know if he beats Matteo Berrettini. So yeah, big up Holger Rune, honestly. Hopefully he can continue to, I don't know, on this path of mental maturity, whatever it is that he's finding himself, because I think he's a tremendous player on his day. Like, I've always liked Holger Rune, so.
Do we want to do a quick run over of our, I think we've touched on most of them, but our predictions from the men's side?
Yeah, okay, let's do this. So for Gambler's Dream, right? We made nobody any money, so like, do not ever listen to us when it comes to picking who to bet on, because I pick Roman Safiulin, right? I was shouting first round to the cock, to the big cock, Kokkinakis, whooped his ass. And then you had picked Alexei Popyrin and Giovanni Pecci-Paracard, both out in the first round, ass picks. Nobody listened to us because we're going to lose your money. The dark horses, I got to say, we did a little better. Like, I picked Tommy Paul. Like I said, he could have been in the semifinal. And this is a bit like I'm reaching here, but hear me out, right? Reaches the semifinal, beats Djokovic in the first set. Djokovic retires out of nowhere, gets booed, gets pissed, whatever. Tommy Paul goes to the final, still loses to Sinner, but he's in the final, and that would have been a good dark horse pick, but he couldn't close it out against Zverev. And you picked Deminor. Again, we touched on him. Shame about the draw. Our favorites, you had at number three, you had Taylor Fritz. We touched on him. Shame, lost him on feels. We'll be back. I think it was, I'm not really too concerned about like the future of his season for some reason. I had Novak Djokovic, one game away, a muscle tear away. Who knows? Maybe 25th was coming. Maybe not. I don't think he would have beat Sinner, to be honest, but he probably, at least like the aura makes him a little bit more nervous, I feel. And then for number two, you had Alexander Zverev. I mean, he made the final, so that's a great shout. I had Carlos Alcaraz, who did not make the final. He made the quarters. And then as the number one, we had the winner himself, Yannick Sinner, Mr. Hardcourt Slam Merchant. Crazy last stat, he's won the last three hardcourt slams. He's lost a total of seven sets in those three slams. And only once did it go to five sets. It was when he was down 2-love to Medvedev and came back last year. So yeah, that about wraps it up. Oh, final thing, rating, tournament.
Rating, and I don't think I've touched on my match of the tournament. I would probably
Your match of the tournament.
Yeah, for me, I'd probably go either Carlos Novak, or I also really enjoyed Draper Kokkinakis. I thought was a really good
great
game.
Shout, man. Great shout. I forgot about that one because it was early, but that was awesome match. And also Jack Draper Vukic, also a great match, actually. Jack Draper
I don't know what
the Australians.
Don't know what Jack Draper was thinking going into this tournament where he just wanted to play five sets and, you know, give... I think he was just toying with the Australian crowd. He was like, oh, I'm going to let them get within a hair's breadth of getting into the next round, and then I'm going to ruin their spirits. Because Kokkinakis served for the match, and Draper was like, I think not, and broke him to love. You know?
Ridiculous. With the most insane tennis he had played up until that point in the match. And I'm pretty sure Vukic was also up 2-1 on him, and he also came back and won that
and
one.
Then went to play Carlos and was like, nah, I'll retire.
I mean, he must have been running. I think we found it, right? 3 5-set matches, you're done. You know, we also had Alejandro Davidovich Fokina came back twice from 2 sets to love down. Next match, my boy was cooked. Like, he could not do anything. And big up Lorenzo Sonego making your first slam quarterfinal. Big up. I don't know. Congrats. Overall rating.
Rating. For me, I'm going 7.5.
I'm going 6.5 out of 10.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair.
Yeah. Final let me down a little. But that is it for our ATP wrap up. Join us right after this little tennis sound for some last little things and talking about our favorite things to come out of Australia that aren't tennis.
30.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is my absolute honor to present to you the champion himself, a man who made picks with no remorse, trusting his gut each step of the way to lead him to his maiden Grand Slam title, the Australian Open. Here he is, the one, the only, Jason Sweetfeet Smeets, our predictions champion.
Oh, thank you very much for that that lovely intro there.
Damn it, man. I wanted to win so bad, bro.
What can I say? Thank you to all the fans out there. I am the tennis brain. I thought... I could have made some money out there with some of my picks. I think especially day two, where I picked Mickelson to beat Tsitsipas, because I got everything else right on there as well. That would have been a fat parlay. I think we were a lot of the way we had similar picks. It was just a few upset calls that came through on my side. I think I got a lucky retiree as well. I also picked Zverev to beat Djokovic and got a lucky retiree there.
That was my fault, because I picked, like, man, everybody was saying, like, oh, Djokovic is injured, like, he's running on one leg, and I was like, nah, I'm gonna pick him.
I'm not surprised at all, to be honest. You were back into the ends of the earth, and fair enough, because the guy is absolutely nuts. So yeah, fair call.
But yeah, congratulations, it's your first title. We still have, you know, lots of predictions to go this year. You know, we hopefully we can get them done as well for Masters 1000 titles. And, I mean, and
you've also, next Grand Slam is, as an Argentine, you're a clay court merchant, so exactly. You should have a pretty good shot there.
Yeah. I should win it, really. It's the one slam I feel like I'm guaranteed, to be honest. If I don't win it, man, I can't go 2-0 love. I can't go 2 love down on the slams. Like. But yeah, it was a tight race up until the end.
Calendar year
Grand
Slam.
Congratulations. Yeah, calendar year Grand Slam for Jason is on. Stay tuned with us. We will bring you one last little segment.
All right, guys, and as usual, we are bringing to you a little bit of non-tennis related fun for those of you that, you know, maybe don't really care about tennis. I don't know why you'd be here if you don't at least care a little bit about tennis. But what we're doing today, we've done, our last segment was certain Australian animals that we could maybe beat in a fight or not beat in a fight. Today, we're looking at top five things to come out of Australia. So these could be people, things, food, inventions, you know, all kinds, all manner of stuff, anything to come out of Australia that isn't tennis or tennis players. So let's start at number five. What have you got?
So at number five, this one is more if you know, you know. I've gone for Kath and Kim, the hit sitcom from the early 2000s. It's an absolute hoot. I love it. I think it's hilarious. It's on Netflix. You should watch it if you like screaming Australian humor, which I didn't know I did, but apparently I love it. I was hooked from the get-go. It's, I don't know, it's very peculiar humor, but I recommend it to anybody.
Mm.
Who, well what said. Do you have at five?
Number five, I've got Margot Robbie.
Okay, yeah, nice. She's my honorable mention.
See, I wonder if we're gonna have any of the same ones. It'll be kind of crazy if we do. Yeah, great actress. What else can I say? You know, just that's all. Yeah. That's all. Just very talented.
Very talented.
Very talented young lady.
I loved her in the Barbie movie, and That's the only thing I've seen her in. I definitely haven't seen her in the Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh yeah, me
nope.
Neither. Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Nope. Anyway, moving on from Margot Robbie. Number four.
Number four, I've gone for Tim Tams because Tim Tams are amazing.
I can confirm Tim Tams are amazing. I've had a couple sleeves since I got here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm jealous because I used to get them in Hong Kong, but I can't. I'm sure there's some place that sells them in Groningen in the Netherlands. But I love Tim Tams. I don't know. Did Tim Tams make your list?
Tim Tams did not make my list. I did not think of that. Yeah.
Controversial. Mm. But yeah, Tim Tams, my number four. What do you have at number four?
I've got the didgeridoo.
that sounds like...
Yeah. Exactly that. I don't know. It's such a unique instrument, such a unique sound, and just such a special piece in Australian history. So yeah, I think it just had to make the list for me. It's just such a special instrument. Yeah.
It's definitely one of those that I'd be like, "What? You know how to play that? Like that's kind of cool, man. I want to be friends with you."
Yeah, I would instantly become friends with someone if I walked into their house for the first time and they were like, "Hey, you want to hear me play the didgeridoo?" I would be, "Yes, please." Like, can you imagine? I think
that becomes
I wouldn't know another
instead
instrument.
Of the guitar guy.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't know. Yeah, they're playing Wonderwall on a didgeridoo.
instead of the guitar guy, it's like, "Oh, Jason brought his didgeridoo again." What is it called? Didgeridoo? What's it called?
Didgeridoo. Yeah.
Didgeridoo, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's that was my pick at number four. Moving on,
I like
number
that
three.
Pick. I like
into
that.
The into the middle number, positions.
Number three, I've gone for Hugh Jackman.
Right, I thought about putting him in there, but Margot Robbie took my actress slash actor.
Yeah, I also went for one person, and I was like Hugh Jackman, Margot Robbie, Hugh Jackman, Wolverine, you know.
Yeah, I do have one more person in here actually.
Okay.
But they're not an actor. They're actually at number one. So.
Oh, at number one you have okay. What do you have at number three then? Because I have the Hugh.
At number three, I've got the song "Down Under" by Men at Work.
I iconic song, made even more iconic by UFC former UFC champion Alex Volkanovski. Used to walk out to it every time.
I thought you might have Volk in your top five, to be honest.
I was gonna put Volk in there, but I thought, like, you know what, I'm gonna really think of my favorite things from Australia.
Yeah, I mean, even though this song is Australian, I kind of identify with it as a New Zealander.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's just so iconic. The intro, the do 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 do.
I don't think there's it's kind of one of those like Sweet Caroline type beat songs that just everybody knows and everybody likes, you know. Like there's Africa by Toto is in the same range of song as Down Under.
There's also a drum and bass remix that came out a few years ago and it goes hard.
Can confirm. I'd like that.
Yeah. All right, silver medal position.
Silver medal position, I've gone for Google Maps. Did you know that Google Maps was created in Australia?
I did not know that.
I looked it up and apparently it was created, it was created by Danish software engineers in Sydney, for Sydney originally, and then that became Google Maps. And I love Google Maps. Like, I use it all the time. I still use it in Groningen. Yeah, I've lived here for 6 years. It's not that big, and I still use it sometimes. So Google Maps had to be in my top two.
Yeah, definitely. I did not know that that was remotely Australian, but that is probably one of the most useful things in my life. So props to the Australians who made
absolutely
that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who's taking number two for you?
I've got a TV show. To match your Kath and Kim, I've gone with Bondi Rescue. What a show!
That
this
is a great
show. Just you know, tourists who have no idea what they're doing, going to an extremely dangerous beach in Sydney, which is always absolutely packed every day of the summer, and they wander in fully clothed and have to have these burly men come and save them. And some, you know, really, I take my hats off to these guys, these lifeguards, because what they do is actually super, super impressive. Because some of the, you know, the show does get really serious as well. There's genuinely people who almost drown, and I think even do drown at some points. But
I didn't know it was the way like that, dude. Yeah. I didn't know that they would actually have people drown in
Yeah, dude, it's not all fun and games, but it's crazy how they're able to, how quickly they paddle out in these crazy conditions as well. And there's so many people at this beach all the time. Like, on a busy day, this beach is packed with people.
Yeah.
And there's so much drama. And then the way that they're able to just pluck these people from the ocean when they're, you know, seconds from drowning is so, so impressive. And I love that show. And it's that's why it's at my number two.
Oh, I like that. No, Bondi Rescue is really good. It's really good.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. The big one. Number one. What have you
gone for? This one, I feel a little bad because I feel like it's also like, if you know, you know. But I've gone for barbecue flavored shapes. Because those are
undoubted. Barbecue flavor? Not pizza?
Barbecue flavor. I like barbecue more than pizza.
Oh, man. I don't know about that. Barbecue.
The green package, the hexagon shape. Oh, come on. Give me that.
That the shape of the cracker does not impact the flavor, right?
If it was a triangle, it wouldn't be as good. Because then I would think of pizza.
Original shape flavors. What do you have a ranking for those as well?
I would have to look back. I would have to go look at them. Oh, well, or like got shapes in general. Like, what is my favorite shape?
No. The shapes crackers. I think you've got chicken. You've got cheese and bacon. You've got pizza, and you've got barbecue. I think those are the OG.
Oh, okay. I've had barbecue and pizza for sure, and I like barbecue more than pizza.
Yeah, yeah. I think my definitive ranking would be pizza 1, barbecue 2. Chicken 3. Chicken flavored anything, I'm not a huge fan of. It's just salt.
But, but you know, I like when I first saw that when I moved to Hong Kong, like chicken flavored chips, I'm like, what? What do you mean chicken? But man, I love the chicken flavor. Like, I think it just tastes like a little bouillon cube sprinkled on chips, you know? It's kind of nice.
All right. And then I've got at last, I'd have the cheese and bacon shapes. I'm not a huge fan of those. Yeah. No. But anyway, two but food items on your list, right?
I went for Tim Tams barbecue flavor shakes. Mm.
My number one, I think the greatest cultural export to ever come out of Australia, the late, the great, the crocodile hunter, Steve Irwin.
Oh my God, how did I forget about Steve Irwin?
I couldn't not put him at number one. Such a legend. You know, no one does, you know, wildlife like he does. So passionate about everything. I've never, you know, the way that he talks about it in his some of his old videos. I remember the day that he died quite vividly, just because I was watching an episode of The Crocodile Hunter the day before he died, which was kind of crazy. Always gonna have a slight irk with stingrays from now on. I actually saw a couple stingrays while I was here, and I was pretty close to going down and, you know, giving them a piece of my mind for old Steve, you know.
Throw your hands.
But yeah, I think that, you know, what he did for sort of the way that he experienced wildlife and the conservation aspect that he had to treating wildlife was really amazing. And that's why he's at number one, and just so culturally significant as well.
No, I love that. I love that shout, actually, and it's cool to see. I don't know his son's name. I think Robert, maybe?
Yeah.
But also super dope guy. Super dope guy. Like, also just doing all the animal shit, like, following in his dad's footsteps. Like,
big on the
TikTok,
believe
I didn't think... Yeah. I follow him on TikTok. I can't believe I didn't think of him. I feel kind of, like, sad for him for some reason. But, no, that's a great shout. I think honorable mention, another one, AC/DC. I mean, like, they're also super culturally significant, I guess you could say. But yeah, I think that about wraps us up for our Australian Open review. Thank you so much for joining us again. Like Jason said, top of the show. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, on X, at CrossCourtsConvos, so you never miss an episode or a prediction or some silly Instagram post that we decide to make. Thank you so much, everybody that messaged us, liked, shared any of our stories that we've been posting throughout the 2 weeks of the Australian Open. Those of you who interacted, who told us that we were terrible at picking games. And for those who, clicked on the story, we just really appreciate it. And stay tuned for all our new content. Take care. Take it easy.
We'll see you soon. Goodbye.